It's time, fellow Korean fellatio enthusiasts. Playoffs are upon us, Wolf. The first round is not very exciting, so I doubt we're going to spend much time talking about it today. Because, as we all predicted, Kwangdong, even though they fell to DRX, even though they fell to Breon twice, well, Wolf, when it mattered, they got their stuff together, and now, with an epic win 2-0 over D plus Kia, they managed to kick FearX out of the playoffs, secure the sixth seed so that they could die immediately to Hanwha Life in the first round in what is sure to be an extremely boring best of five.
It's going to be, fast. It might be interesting in that Hanwha could, could smash them in an interesting, quick way. I don't think it's going to be the greatest round one of playoffs we've ever seen. KT versus D plus, that'll be wild. That one could be a crazy series. I think I heavily favor KT going into that one, but the D plus loss to Kwangdong was one that, isn't shocking considering how D plus have been up and down this season, but it is also, it was surprising, I think, to me and to most people, because Kwangdong Freaks just looked like they weren't going to get it together. They looked like they weren't going to actually be a team that could do anything. And D-Plus kind of dropped the ball in that series as well.
What? You didn't like Showmaker's Tristana?
Not really, no.
No, nobody liked that, in fact. Nobody liked that at all.
I even looking back at the drafts now. This was the Aurelion Soul game. The first game was the Aurelion Soul game where they kept trying to dive on Bulldog super disjointed, and he just would fly away or ult them and then turn. And, like, clearly Quantum Freaks knew how to play around this Aurelion Soul and how to kind of use Bulldog to bait, right? It wasn't just D-plus not knowing what Aurelion Soul does, right? Because the Showmakers played it before. I don't know. It felt very strange and very obvious the way that D plus messed this up, like in terms of just being super disjointed, not shot calling correctly. And I'm like, are we going back to this issue again? Are we doing this again where the shot calling isn't happening? When it seemed like it was getting better. That was a frustrating game. And then what the casters called Kingan's solo adventure on the Volibear, where he tried to do things and his team watched him go. I thought the Syndra pick was really cool in that comp as well, because it's really nice disengage into the rail, into the Volibear. And so I like that draft from Quantum Freaks in the last game. Quantum.
Well, this was just classic Kwangdong. You just gave them everything you wanted, right?
Yeah.
Everything they wanted. Doo Doo gets Aatrox. We get Cuz onto Viego. We get a scaling late game mage on Bulldog. And we get Varus on Bull, and this is his most played champion this split. He's 5-1 on it. They pick it whenever they absolutely can, so they get the priority in the bot lane, scaling mage in the middle, huge carry jungler, GG. This is not how you want to give... These are not the champions. This is not the kind of comp you want to give Kwangdong, because this has been absolutely their comfort zone in these wins.
Yeah. Cuz on Viego, game one, didn't have the most amazing early game or anything like that, but the late game skirmishes that went a little bit weird, went a little bit crazy, Cuz popped off and carried, because he's good at that. And Quantum looks decent in this series. He looked like a pretty good player overall. Serviceable as a replacement for Andil, who still has, some health issues that we don't really know the full details about, but... He looked like he's a very much less aggressive player than Andil, and I think he reins Bull in a little bit, so I think he's good for Bull in that way. And obviously they've played together a lot in the past, so Bull has played a ton with Andil, he's played a decent amount with Quantum as well, with some swap outs that have happened in Challengers, so they know each other. But I imagine Quantum will be playing in playoffs as well, so he had a pretty good look in this series, not as strong in the series against KT, although I don't think he looked really like horrible or anything in the KT series. It just wasn't as high impact. His Ashe started off great, then got called a few times once they started to lose the game, which is kind of how that goes.
Yeah, so, see, you know, in Kwangdong, you know, we wondered whether it would be an actual serious match because playoffs had been set by the time that KT played Kwangdong. And so in the spirit of your sweatshirt, you know, in game two, KT just said, cheese it, and then picked a Rammus.
I mean, the Rammus seems cheesy, like, when you just see the word Rammus, because you're like, well, that's not a thing that is used in pro play. But it's the second time Pyoshik's done it, and it was into an almost full AD comp with, like, Ahri being the only source of magic damage, and they couldn't kill him, and it worked really well. And he did do pretty hilarious things, like drive away with his Q and just roll out and then go, good luck, guys, in the comms. Like, I'm sure I'm rooting for you. Like, he literally said stuff like that in the voice comms that we had.
It was funny to watch him get to like 10 HP every time and then just roll away and wish his team luck, as you say.
I mean, he had some good dives bottom lane as well. Like, he made some pretty large impacts in the early game. It was really fun. I enjoyed that. And also, KT just looked pretty clean in general. And they're a very decisive team. Like, I think the difference between D plus and KT is rooted in the fact that KT will make a decision quickly and deliberately every time. It's not always the right decision, but they don't hesitate. They don't like happy feet around the map and go, well, I'm not really sure. Like, are we going to fight this objective or back off? Or, you know, we don't see a team fight where Pyoshik goes in by himself and the rest of the team is walking the other direction and the Pyoshik dies. You know, there's not that kind of weird split for KT, whereas for the side of D+, that is just kind of the standard a lot of the time. And then aiming turns his brain off sometimes. Like,
all the time.
Valdez has been kind of tracking aiming the last few weeks about, like, what goes wrong with him, because he's obviously a really good AD carry player who has a great late game and was often in KT just like left to farm and then he pops off. And like that was why it was such a good roster with him and Lehens, because Lehens, you know, would get a bunch of resources for the rest of his team and then aiming would be like, all right, so we're winning over there. Okay, I'll come with the money I've been sitting on. Now he just takes the whole map of farm every game and then just like for some reason eventually ints. And it seems like he just loses focus.
Well, he's all hands, no brain. He's all hands, no brain, Wolf. And, like, there is no brain on the team. So, without anybody to tell Aiming where to go, to say, Aiming, come here, go kill, he just wanders off by himself and dies.
And wanders off by himself to, like, try to get a little bit more CS. But sometimes he doesn't, like, make a mistake. Sometimes he doesn't position poorly. But it does seem like Valdez's theory, which seems to be, like, to me, I'm starting to really buy into this, is just he seems to kind of just lose focus in these games. Like, he doesn't, like, remember where he, or, like, where what the game state is or where he needs to be. And he will just do something really silly. And I don't know what it is. I don't know what else there is. There's no other explanation, because sometimes he doesn't lose focus and he looks good. And then other times he just will walk towards the enemy Aatrox or something silly like that and die. And we're like, why would he do that? Why would anyone do that? Even Taewon wouldn't do that, you know? So I don't know how solvable this problem is going to be for D+, because clearly on KT people told him what to do better. And he did the right thing. And that's not happening here. And we know Lehens is very vocal to his AD carries. We've seen him scolding Paze a lot this season. And I've seen him scolding Aiming as well. And I think he probably micromanaged Aiming a lot more than Kellen, who seems to not speak much at all. Ever.
No, he's mute.
So I don't know, Monty. I want to say good things about D+. Like, I feel like Kingan got better.
You do? I don't.
I mean, Kingan got better. Come on, Kingan got better. Like, is he consistently better? No, but, like, from...
What, you know, really? What, like, let's compare it to Perfect. Perfect looks way better.
Oh, yeah, Perfect these is days. The most improved player of the LCK. Like, I think if there was an award for that, he would win it. For sure. He can't get Rookie of the Year because Hirai made him play with the Challengers team.
Wait. That one game, one meaningless game last year means he can't get Rookie of the Split?
That's right. He's not eligible.
That what the fuck? You should have to play more than one game of a split.
So I think
to not be counted as a rookie.
I think the rule exists so that you don't have any weird ambiguity about like, well, wait, did he have to play like two games? Or did he have to play like five games? Or did he have to play like?
What do you mean that's not ambiguous? You just make a rule and you say, if this player hasn't played more than like three LCK games, because you might see a temporary call up. Like, for example, even when Bible was called up last year, if Bible were to show up this year, I would still consider him a rookie because he had played just a handful of games as kind of a substitute player or as a trial player. Right. So I would think that any rookie, like I would say like five games within a given calendar year.
Well, look, I don't make the rules, but he's not eligible.
Insane, Wolf.
Do you remember last year when Hirai subbed the players in and I was like, well, this is wrong. To me, I felt like this is like disrespectful in some ways, but also I did mention that it likely will remove some of these players from Rookie of the Year contention potentially. and lo and behold, like Perfect can't get it. So, whatever. I mean, does he really care? You might want some of that, the money that you get from that, I guess. But I'm sad for him because, I mean, there is no rookie of the split for spring. It's just for the year. So, like, you know, who knows? Maybe Lucid pulls it off and he ends up being rookie of the year by the end of summer or something like
or
that.
Or Bull.
I mean, neither of them are really on trajectory the same way that Perfect is right now. But he can't get it. So it's going to be one of them, maybe. Or a new player entirely. Pull Bay? No, probably not. I think Kingen improved. Perfect improved way more, obviously, but Kingen still, I mean, he was World's MVP, and you know he showed some flashes of his best games this season. I do think that Perfect versus Kingen, like if you just said like is Kingen better than Perfect, I'd say yeah, probably still a little bit, even though Perfect has done a lot more recently. I think Kingen is a overall more well-rounded player still, but Perfect will pass him, I think, by the end of this year if his trajectory continues. But yeah, Kingen, he looked better. Showmaker looked really good at the beginning of the season. Has since they put him on Karma duty, he's kind of fallen off a little bit. Like, his Karma games were good, but then when he had to not play Karma, he didn't do as well in recent times. But D+, I wanted to believe that maybe this team had it in them to do something interesting at the end of the season here. But after this loss to Kwangdo, I'm like, oh, never mind. Especially then when you compared KT playing against Kwangdo and just, like, trolling them and destroying them. Makes you feel like going to that D+ KT series, which was the most interesting part about these two teams for me this week, is how are they going to both perform against Kwangdo, because they play against each other, and that's going to be our measuring stick, because Kwangdo is going to be on the other side of the bracket, and they don't have to think about that. So they can do whatever they want against Kwangdo. And then KT showed up, D+ did not. So does that mean KT 3-0 D+? Maybe. Right now I am leaning towards that prediction.
Well, I mean, I think the thing to remember is that, okay, so these teams did play a few weeks ago, and it was a giant dumpster fire in week 6, and D+ won 2-1, right, Wolf?
Yeah.
So people might be thinking, oh, well, why are you saying that KT has a big edge? Well, first off, KT just looks better recently. But also, because even in that series that D+ won, I thought KT looked like the better team in spite of the loss. Because you'll remember that there were two very close games. Game 1 and Game 3 were both over 50 minutes long, and both of those games were won by D+. Game 2, KT basically just stomped D+. And so if KT just had a little bit less coin flippiness in the late game in either game 1 or game 3, we're looking at that as a KT win. But I think overall KT looked like the superior team even in the series that they lost.
Yeah, and form at the end of the season is really important, and I think that right now KT's form looks way better than D+'s. So you could rewind some of the weird stuff that's happened for a lot of these teams with Kwangdong, for example, and be like, well, Kwangdong beat both of them, so does that mean that they're going to maybe have a chance against Hanwha? No, but, like, recently Kwangdong looked better until they lost to KT. Like, looked better against D+, which seems like a point against D+ right now, rather than a point for Kwangdong, especially after you watch the KT series. So,
yeah.
This last week, I mean, it was besides that Kwangdong win, and then obviously the KT win that we weren't sure about after Kwangdong did beat D plus, but I mean, I wasn't too worried, but I thought, okay, maybe something interesting could happen there. It was otherwise a pretty self-explanatory week. Fear X also lost to Nongshim, which was like, oh, so even if Kwangdong didn't win, you guys were not going to go to playoffs. I see. So that was kind of interesting. Like, if I felt really sad for Fear X when D plus dropped the ball and Kwangdong went, I was like, oh, it must be terrible to be a Fear X fan because now you can't go to playoffs. But then they couldn't beat Nongshim, so it was no longer sad for them. They didn't get it done. KT Hanwha was kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean, that was another thing where I think you look at this and you say, okay, because, I mean, you know, we did get to see KT play Hanwha Life, which is a much better team. You know, it was, KT was able to at least take that to three games and look somewhat respectable in doing so. I mean, I don't think KT is going to, you know, beat Hanwha in the playoffs or anything like that. But, I mean, there's clearly, like, the T1 Gen G Hanwha tier, and then the D plus KT tier, and then the Kwangdong tier heading into playoffs. And it's very unlikely we will see any upsets between tiers, I think.
Yeah, I don't think so. Maybe moving to round two, which we'll talk about later as we get closer to it. That's where there's like some intricate things that you could talk about in terms of, yes, Gen G is S tier, and then you have like A tier for T1 Hanwha, and Hanwha did beat T1, but like how that all shakes down, we'll get into a little bit later on, because I think there are some interesting things to discuss there. But for round one, I mean, there's no world in which Hanwha loses to Kwangdong. It just, if that happens,
no. I think, and this is also a testament, Kwangdong. You know, this is also a testament to Hanwha because they're coming off a very strong end to the split. And I think they deserve a lot of credit. Obviously, the win over T1 is huge. But the way they're dismantling other teams is also very impressive. Like, they look as though they're a legitimately good team now. Primarily, it's not necessarily due to their champion pools, but I think there are a couple factors. First off, Viper is just fucking amazing, number one. And then number two, they really have a very strong sense of, like, team comp win condition in their team fighting. Like, their team fighting is very, very good. And, you know, even in games like we saw versus D plus, where Viper was on Lucian, they actually didn't mind sacrificing Viper. Like, Viper would basically max damage in the front line as Lucian. But as soon as he was engaged upon, the counter engage of like Yone ult, Gnar ult, Maokai ult, Nami ult, basically they just wiped out the back line and killed aiming on the Aphelios. So they were almost just using Viper as bait in those games. And I think they did really well because they basically forced D plus to use like Vi and Ahri ults to kill Viper. And if they went in on that, then the counter engage was just massive and Aphelios was just assassinated in the back line. And so what I love about watching Hanwha these days is that they really just know how their champions interact together and what that win condition is. And I think, again, it's very strong shot calling from Peanut. But they look very well coordinated, all on the same page, and it's impressive. I think they have extremely good team fighting right now. And that's exciting because if you couple that with the fact that we've seen some really good early games now from Peanut, I mean, look at the way he just dominated Owner in the series versus T1. It feels like it really all is coming together right now and they're becoming a cohesive unit. And you include this with good pathing, Viper being a beast, and like they feel very dangerous coming into these playoffs.
I think I agree. And you know, there's a little bit of a fear of which Zekka you get in playoffs, which Doran you get, obviously, because those two players have had some rough games. Like for Doran, it isn't champ dependent. It's just kind of what
He always does this though. He always just dies in lane.
Yeah,
that's his thing.
In lane, it doesn't matter, but sometimes it does matter. Sometimes, like in the 2022 summer finals, like he doesn't die in lane, and you're like, "Whoa, he really didn't die in lane. That was sick." And then he gets robbed.
And then they dominate even harder.
Yeah, he should have gotten MVP. But anyway, Zekka, on the other hand, has a champion pool problem that at least he seems to be capable of playing Taliyah well now. But in the KT series, he played Corki, and he still refuses to use it, the package, as anything but like a hard engage tool. Still,
it's the Yone ult. When you think about Quirky Package, it's really just a Yone ult.
Yeah. if you say so, Monty. They also played the Camille support, which I think is really good in solo queue, absolutely terrible in pro play, and it did not go well.
I mean, if you guys watched LPL, there was a game between Top Esports and WE where the Camille support came out, and basically they tried to all in at level one, and it literally lost them the game, because then the Camille died, and then Prince was playing Jhin, and he was just dove continuously and zoned off CS, and he had like 30 CS at 10 minutes, and WE just got completely shit stomped. So, I mean, it's just very risky.
I think it's a strat that often works against uncoordinated teams in solo queue, rather. And then you get ahead and you get so fed, you just snowball so hard, you get so many items that it doesn't matter that Camille's a support, because you just actually get to do things. But if you don't win the all-ins and you don't get massively ahead, you're just a worse engaged support than other meta engaged supports, and you just get blown up every time you try to go in, and it just isn't that strong. And it doesn't have any side lane power like Camille normally does when she's actually in the top lane. So it just feels, like you say, risky, but I think the risk versus return, the risk is way higher than the potential returns you could get from it. It was cool to see, and I know it was like dominating solo queue when everyone was playing it, but
I mean, I could see it maybe into Smolder as being okay.
Yeah. Sure.
Because it does lock him down in the late game.
Damage too, like, well, I mean, in the late game, yes, I was more talking about mid game, but in the mid game, like, right, you lock down, he can't actually turn on you into damage. Lucian is just like, a Camille hex tech ultimated me, I will kill her now, I don't care, she has no items.
Yeah. So, I mean, but it's like game one stuff like that. I mean, game one is game one in a best of three, and that's the one KT won, and Han was like, well, that didn't work, and we'll just win the next two now, right? So I don't read too much into that. Like, there's usually going to be more experimental picks. I mean, they went back to the Quirky in that game as well. I wouldn't think that. I mean, it was really just the Zeri Camille combination just feels really weird in the laning phase, especially into Lucian Nami. And like, why do that when we have answers like Aphelios Lulu, right?
I do think, like, the final game of that series where KT played the Vi Ahri Jinx, I was a little bit disappointed with their performance on those picks. I think that comp is actually really strong and has a ton of mid-game power. They had a Renekton in there as well. And they just kept getting shut down by Peanut, Doran, Viper got fed. They tried to force a few fights early. But I actually think, I mean, a lot of people are just like, oh, is Jinx back? I'm like, no, not necessarily. Crit items are going to be better on the next patch, but I think Jinx is back because teams have started screaming with Vi Ahri comps with Jinx, where she gets excited off of the initial pick, and it's really strong. We're just seeing it's not really working in pro play yet, because for some reason the teams kind of dropped the ball with their coordination with it. But I do think, just like we've seen in the past, pick-based Jinx comps can be really strong. And I do think that we will continue to see it as we move into playoffs, just because while Jinx, I don't think, is getting any direct buffs moving on to the next patch, there's some buffs to some of the crit items that she likes to build. So I think that will continue to be a thing, and Deft is very good at Jinx normally. It has not really been this season, but that could be an extra boon for them. I don't read too much into that particular Jinx game as much as I just read into the Hanwha shutting down their mid game super hard and that being a one-sided stomp there. So Viper on Zeri, very scary. Viper on anything. Honestly, Viper's Lucian. Viper
is crazy right now. He's so good.
His Smolder was like the fastest stack build we had. He just plays everything well. He doesn't get to play Senna because that's not allowed, but I don't think he needs Senna.
They're not a Senna team. Let's be real. Hanwha's not a Senna team.
No, they're not.
As we look into these playoffs too, I think like Hanwha probably doesn't have a chance to win this, but you know, the T1 upset is starting to look a little bit scary because you have to assume that it's going to be T1 versus Hanwha in the second round, right? And that's where you start to get a bit nervous if you're T1 because their recent performance, yeah, they came back, but they only had DRX and Nongshim this week. And they don't look very comfortable with the current meta. Are we actually going to see 14-6 for LCK playoffs, Wolf? Is that the patch the entire playoffs are going to be on?
That's correct.
That's great. Hooray! Smolder nerfs.
We'll be back. I actually was told incorrectly that Azir was going to be back for week 9, but that wasn't true. So, but he will be back for next week in all playoffs.
I mean, that probably really helps T1 wrong. In particular.
Yeah. Well, I think it helps KT as well. Like, BD is really good at Azir.
Sure. I mean, Chovy is also very good at Azir, right? I mean, there's a bunch of Azir players, but, you know, Chovy has played, what, 16 different champions this split? So I think he's less hurt by the lack of Azir, even though it's still his most played champion.
Yeah. I would agree with that. Showmaker Grasp Azir coming back.
Oh, my God. No. Throw it in the trash can. Well, they can't do King and Top Smolder Grasp Azir anymore, Wolf, because Smolder's going to be nerfed into the grave.
Yeah, well, I think we'll all be okay with it.
I will be very okay with it. I mean, T1 should be very okay with it because the weird Zeri meta that's resulted as a result of, you know, Smolder existing, it does hurt them, I think. Yeah. Does hurt T1.
They also seem to struggle to build a composition to kill the Smolder in that Nongshim game. I don't know if you remember the Jiwoo, is this going to be another Jhin Air Green Wings? Oops, got hit by Varus arrow. I guess it's over.
I mean, the Smolder stacks were absolutely insane in that game. It's a miracle they won. I mean, T1, it just goes to show how bullshit this champion is, though, where you can control every single late game objective, get them multiple times, and still almost lose because of one dumbass champion.
Really strong. Infinite stacking.
Who knew?
Who knew? But yeah, I mean, looking at T1, moving into a potential matchup with Hanwha is a really interesting conversation because I think the same problems that they had in the last series against them, where Hanwha was able to take the upset win, will prevail unless Owner is able to improve, because Peanut just seems to be stronger than he is right now. And in the top lane, I always feel like Owner has been a great Zeus neutralizer. He just doesn't end up getting massive advantage against Doran. And I'm a little bit biased about that going back to that 2022 summer finals, but he does really just shut down everything that Doran is trying to, or that Zeus is trying to do oftentimes. And it's really cool to see how that matchup kind of is warped. It warps how T1 plays the game. And then, you know, Faker versus Ekka, that's a matchup that, you know, we give the edge to Faker on champion pool. We overall give him the laning advantage. But sometimes Zeka has more clutch engages than him if he's on a champion he's actually good at. You know, like the Yone, he does play very well. The Taliyah, he's looked pretty good on, but I wouldn't give him the edge over Faker in that department just yet. But bottom lane, the Zeri issue does, you know, it does stand out like a sore thumb. And then otherwise, I feel like Karia, if in the conversation between Karia and Delight, Karia has been more innovative. Karia has had more standout games. But I feel like Delight might arguably be more consistent than he is this season in terms of just making standard pick plays. You know, they're not going to be the ones that are on the highlight reel. You know, they're not going to be in the mad movie every week. But they are being made consistently, right? He did not get a triple kill on Tahm Kench. But, like, that game was 100% over. And it looks really cool when Karia does that, and he goes in and does the stuff. But, like, as someone who knows the game, when we're watching the game, we're analysts, we look at this, we're like, well, I mean, that is interesting and very funny. But also, it was not as impressive as some of the other stuff that he has done and that Delight has done, because the game was simply off the rails, and he was tank Tahm Kench with a million gold and was just killing people. That's what happened. He played it well, but, you know, maybe we should talk about All Pro and MVP and start.
All right,
rank some of these roles.
Now that I mean, I think this one's extremely simple. Wolf, Chovy is the MVP of the league.
Chovy's the MVP of the league.
Like, what are the rumors? What are the Korean casters saying? Is there anybody who disagrees with this? Because they shafted Keen and BDD last split for Lehens, which made no fucking sense. So I have to assume that they're up to some shenanigans, Wolf.
I mean, I've heard, I haven't actually asked anyone directly, but I have heard some people mention Zayas as a potential other candidate. But
out of here.
But I think that it is, I think it's going to be almost unanimously a Chovy vote. I just don't see any other way. I mean, he has been the most valuable player. He has an insanely large champion pool. He is
16 champions. All right, here's my case for Chovy. 16 champions across 39 games, right? Extremely good side laning overall. And, you know, for all those people who love to talk about how Chovy, right, doesn't ever do anything on the map, he actually is... he has the lowest 10th place lane percentage at 14 minutes. So in the first 14 minutes, he's only in lane 57% of the time. You know why, guys? Because he's fucking roaming. He's fucking roaming and helping his team. So he actually, you know, we talked a lot about how last spring in particular, Faker was just all over the map with Lissandra and Gragas and all of these other champions. Chovy has been that guy. And in spite of that, guys, in spite of the fact that he has been all over the map, he still is at 10 minutes, has at his CS difference at 10 minutes is still the highest in the league. So he's still 4.7 CS up on average at 10 minutes, despite the fact that he spends the least amount of time in mid lane. That is fucking crazy. And he's still the late game hyper carry we know and love. Is he still very high resource? Yes. He takes the highest percentage of any mid laner of CS after 15 minutes. We know that. He's in a side lane farming, taking turrets. But he's also, you know, second to Bulldog in damage percentage, but he plays a lot less late game, like Giga Poke carries than Bulldog does. And in terms of damage percentage after 15 minutes, he's also second to Bulldog. And you also have to remember that he actually has teammates that do damage, unlike Bulldog.
Yeah. I mean, he's playing with Paze, so there's going to be a lot of large damage share in the bottom lane, too. I mean, Chovy, as an individual player, some of the plays we've seen from him, his consistent MVP awards he's gotten the player of the games, he's stacked up so many. The guy has never really had I can't think of a single game where I've been like, oh, that was a bit of a rough one for Chovy, but it's okay, he'll bounce back next week. Whereas I think for basically everyone else that would even ever be in contention, you could say that. Like, he has been the closest thing to perfect that you could basically...
Not the player, like, you mean perfection, the ideal state.
Yes. and, I mean, yes, I know on Chovy's debut season, he had, like, this incredible KDA, and he, like, was only dying, like, twice or something like that back in the day. And I know that season was, you know, arguably maybe his most impressive season as an individual player, but in terms of just the whole package right now, I feel like he has everything in it. I don't think there's really any real argument to be made.
No, there is zero argument that Chovy is not the MVP of this league. Like, I am sorry, it will be a crime if he doesn't win MVP. He has been the platonic ideal of a mid laner, dominating his lane, having his effect felt on the rest of the map, having a huge, you know, taking the gold, but turning it into huge amounts of damage for his team. You could not ask for a better mid laner to build around if you were a GM or a coach than Chovy. This has been probably his best split ever. And Wolf, and he's now sharing the shot calling duties, which he had never had to do before because Peanut was just microing his brain for him.
Yeah.
And now he actually has to use his own brain and move his mouth some. And it's working. His team is in first place.
Yeah, no, it's almost uninteresting to have the conversation about anyone else. Like, I have heard some people mention Zayas just because of how dominant he was in his role compared to everyone else. But sure, Keen exists, and Zayas has had some bad games, like he has. He's also spent the entire season playing Aatrox almost exclusively, so...
I mean, part of that, though, is that There is an impressive facet to it, which is that he has the lowest counter pick percentage among top laner because he's blinding Aatrox every time, and he's winning in every matchup, basically, and then also having huge effects on late game. So I do agree that it's kind of boring because he's played a lot of Aatrox, and you can criticize him. You can also give him props because it's been blinded and it's been working and nobody bans it. So fuck it, man. And also, I mean, I do think that has been a problem, but I think it's a strategic problem with T1 where his low counterpick percentage eventually caught up with him when he had to face other good top laners towards the end of the split. And then in the last week, we saw him diversify. And finally, I mean, this TF has been giga broken top lane for a long time. Finally, you know, that's when he pulls it out after they lose to Hanwha. And all of a sudden, here he is, and he's doing extremely well with it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying anything bad about Zayas. I just don't think if you compare his impact compared to Chovy's, it's unfortunately not comparable.
Yes. Agreed.
He has been the best top laner. But he hasn't been the best top laner by the same margins that Chovy has been the best mid laner, nor has he showcased the same.
A Kinosaur, we can argue about whether he's been the best top laner, Wolf. You know, some of us have different opinions about whether Zayas has been the best top laner or not. Nobody should have any arguments about whether Chovy has been the best mid laner.
No, there just isn't. So we can give Chovy our Monty Wolf MVP nomination, and then we could talk about a little all pro voting here.
But Wolf, surely the Koreans are just going to vote all of Gen G for first team all pro. Because when they did that for KT last year, it made total sense, which is why KT, finished third place. Which, by the way, the narrative that should have been coming out of the Korean community would have been, what a fucking failure. How could the best player in every position finish third in playoffs? That's almost inconceivable, Wolf, that could actually be a reality. So either a bunch of people were just fucking wrong, or we should have been hearing about how this was one of the biggest upsets in LCK history.
I do think
those are the only two narratives that make sense given the voting.
I do think it was a fairly large upset, but I mean, if you want, so you never know what's going to happen. And we didn't know what's going to happen. I don't want to talk about that loser's final, man. That whole season of, like, is Faker hand work? Is Faker Talia? He was playing Nico and Azir only. And all of that. I don't want to go back into that dark timeline where nobody knows what's happening, and Guma presses R on Zaya and KT disappear. Let's talk about all pro for this season instead. So which role should we start with? Should we start with top? Should we just go top to bottom?
Yeah, let's do it.
So I voted last night, and I had Zayas, Keen, Doran. And the Doran one was a little bit tricky. I thought for third place, I was like, maybe...
Perfect?
There's a world where it's perfect or it's Kingen.
Right. Okay, fair.
But I ultimately thought Doran was a little bit more consistent than both of them, so I did go Doran third. Zayas versus
Keen. Also, there is some recency bias with perfect. So, the thing about perfect is this. People will point out to the fact that Perfect was performing badly in the early parts of the season, but also you have to look at the context in which he was basically left to die in top lane by Pioshik, and Pioshik literally just hard camped for Deft and did nothing while Perfect just was dove over and 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 over again. Also, you could argue, well, Perfect was basically just playing Udyr and Kassante in the earlier parts of the split. But, I mean, clearly, as Perfect got online, he also did have some very good Gnar games, Wolf, early on.
Yeah.
And even to Perfect's credit, even when he was getting fucking worked in lane, he actually figured out ways to be useful with almost no gold and experience in some of those teamfights. Like, he was min-maxing pretty well, even when he was at his worst, right?
Yeah. And I think he didn't really make... Like you said, it was not really his fault that he was getting those bad KDAs. He was just left on an island. Whereas, you know, players like Kingen, for example, have made huge individual mistakes on their own. I feel like Perfect hasn't really made too many big glaring mistakes where you're like, ooh, he doesn't have the experience. He really messed that one up.
Right. He also has stronger shot callers on his team, though, to tell him where to go and what to do. Whereas Kingen is part of just a really stupid hive mind on D+.
I mean, we've already talked a little bit about Zayas versus Keane. I just think that Zayas has made a larger impact.
Sure. And I think Zayas versus Keane is a toss-up, and it just depends on what you value, Wolf. Like, what I value about Keane is his versatility and his ability to counterpick and, like, serve the needs of the team. And a lot of times, that's just been Udyr and Kasante. But sometimes it's been, like, wacky-ass, like, Darius picks where he completely carries the game. You know, we get to see his Tristana pick into Gnar. And so he has had, I think, he's more of like that Swiss Army knife player who just does the job that it's kind of selflessly does the job he needs to do. And I think what's great about Zayas is, as I said earlier, sure, it's been a lot of Aatrox, but he blinds it and then he just dominates the game with it. So it's like, you know, Zayas' attitude a lot of the time is like, I'm just going to play this champ I'm really good at, and you can't stop me, and I'm going to fuck you up. And, like, that's badass, and I like that about Zayas, right?
Yeah, no.
And now we get to see the really good Twisted Fate games this last week. Yeah.
So Keane is a player last year who did what Zayas is doing on a very small handful of champions on a large amount of champions. Like, last year, I think it was very clear in summer that Keane was by far the best top laner.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a toss-up right now. You could take either, depending on which style you like better.
And then this time, you know, obviously he's not the main character of his team really at all, and they're not playing through him that much, so he's a little more utility. So it's tougher for me to put him first in terms of his impact as a top laner, just because we haven't seen, he hasn't had as much opportunity to show that with the drafts he's been given. And, you know, Chovy's MVP, he's pulling, like, all the attention towards him. And I think he's a solid second, especially because of his champion pool, like you just mentioned. But I do have to give Zayas the edge. But for me, it's like a very slight edge. And then the Doran pick and everything else is, you know, that's the one that where it gets a little bit murky, you know, what's correct there. But I think Doran has overall been serviceable enough to where, yeah, he maybe hasn't made as many flashy plays as Kingan has on his best day, but he's also made way less mistakes than Kingan has on his worst day.
I think it's also, you have to take into account recency bias here, because recency bias says that maybe Perfect over Doran, but, like, Doran was doing better in the early parts of the split than Perfect was. You know, recency bias says, like, maybe Keen over Zayas, right? And maybe Perfect over Doran or Kingan, right? But if you look at the totality of the split, like, I can totally understand Zayas being number one, because in the early to mid stages of the split, Zayas was crushing it, right? Yeah. It was only, like, until he started hitting roadblocks against Genji and Hanwha that he was kind of forced to do something different. So, and even in the Genji series, I thought he performed very well against Keen. Like, in isolation, like, him taking the Tristana into Keen's Twisted Fate was a very good pickup, right? It was a good adaptation, and he won that lane.
Yeah. I mean, anytime you put Keen on a ranged top laner, whether it's Ryze, Tristana, it doesn't matter, he draws resources to that side of the map, and so it can give your bottom lane a lot more reprieve. So, I like that versatility that Genji showed us, you know, in, like, weeks 7, 8, I want to say, where they were starting to pull that back out. I think we will see it in playoffs for sure. I think it's a strong point they have. They haven't showed us in a little bit, but I think they absolutely have. Twisted Fate obviously can be one of the main picks for that, but there's a bunch of other stuff that Keen can play. Let's talk about jungle. This one, maybe a little bit less cut and dry, depending on people's opinions about Peanut. I went for Canyon Peanut owner.
Nope. This is gonna be crazy. Peanut. Canyon. Ooh, do I dare to put Cousin here, because he hasn't been good recently, but he was fucking good at the start of the split.
Yeah, no, I thought about it. I thought about it a lot, but I couldn't do it. He had some really rough games over the last half.
Oh yeah, recency bias says no Cuz, but also for every rough game that Cuz had was also, I mean, if we're honest, he was the reason why Kwangdong was like 5-3 at one point in time. Yep. It was basically entirely him. It was a little bit of doo-doo, but it was like 90% Cuz. And him being an absolute fucking hero. And even still, you know, when they win games, even though they haven't done a lot of winning, like, Cuz has been the major driving force on Kwangdong. And I think we saw last year, Cuz was extremely good on KT. So, like, he's one guy on a team of five that got that team into playoffs, is my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that, but I don't think he's I don't think his performances have been consistent enough to warrant the top three with the jungle pool that we have. So I can't do it. Like, I think Owner overall has been a larger impact player than he has. And yeah, you could be like, well,
I think Owner has a much easier job.
That's true.
I think Owner has a much easier job, and Owner is incapable of using his brain when his bot lane isn't winning.
That's a fair criticism, but I think he has made some of the same impacts that Cuz has, and he's done it over a longer period. And with junglers, you know, you can say, well, he did well because his team was better. You can say that, but that's the role. That's jungle. And I think Owner has showcased a ton of his experience, his clutch plays throughout the season. I think Cuz has done that sometimes, but like, you know, sometimes he's tried to overcarry and has lost his team the game.
Sure.
So
that's the only way his team wins.
I know.
He's got some bums. He's got a team full of bums. And like, he's supposed to work with a support player, but who the fuck is his support player? He doesn't even know week to week who his support player is.
So I'm just saying, does that mean that he's better than Owner, though?
Yes.
I'm not going to agree with that. he's made too many massive mistakes for me to trust him right now. Now, last year, I thought he was, in summer at least, I thought he was the best jungle player. And I was shocked that he was even on Kwangdong in the first place. I mean, think back to like where we even are. Like, how did he not get picked up? Why? I think it's because he's not a popular player. And I think a lot of teams built rosters around good players who are also marketable and popular this season. I think that's why Cuz ended up where he is. He just didn't end up making a good case for himself, I guess, for the fans. Even though he's fairly popular in Korea, I feel like he's not as popular as some of the other players, like Peanut, for example. And
all I'm saying is, Wolf, look, I can trust Cuz to win a game when his team is shit. Owner can never be trusted to win the game when his team is shit.
I don't know if I can always trust Cuz to do it. I think I can trust Cuz.
You can't always. I didn't say always. I said you always. Can. He can do it. Owner cannot do it.
I think that's fair.
Owner is fucking boosted, dude.
I don't think he's boosted.
All right. Let me pose a question to you, Wolf. Swap cousin owner. Is T1 better or worse? They're better, Wolf.
No, I think they're worse initially.
They're better.
They're worse initially because Cuz already was on this team with some of these players, and it did not go well. And I think he has a different idea about the game than the rest of T1. Also, I think what Owner does well is slightly worse version of what Peanut does well, which is to put pressure on early, set up dives, do stuff like that. Like, that's why they're both really good at Poppy and play it in a very similar way, because they have a very similar playstyle around early games. I think Peanut's better than him, and I think that's why when they match up against each other, sometimes it goes awry for Owner, because Peanut does outsmart him and outpath him a lot of the time. And that's why Peanut gets second and he gets third. Canyon is so easy because he and Chovy have worked together so well this season. I mean, basically from like the end of week one, week two-ish, like seemed like their synergy was already figured out, and they were just flying around the map at light speed, just destroying everyone. And there was no 2v2 in mid they were ever going to lose. And then Canyon has just been super consistent this season because, unlike on D+, he has lanes that are playing consistently every game. So he just looks way better. And that's a really easy call for me. But Owner versus Peanut, that one is like, okay, we have to give the edge to Peanut. Owner versus Cuz, I can't do it. Cuz he played too much Paper Man. He played only Paper Man, Viego, and sometimes he burned.
So here's the thing. I put Peanut over Canyon, because although Canyon, I think, has been excellent, Peanut has a much harder job with the solo lanes that Peanut has than Canyon does.
I see your metric is more so like, how hard is it for the jungler to be relevant?
Well, my question is, how good is this player relative to the competition, inclusive of the peers that they have to play with? And if you take Peanut out of Hanwha Life, like, this team is much worse.
Absolutely.
Right? Whereas, like, if you take Canyon and replace him with a different job, if you take Canyon and replace him with Cuz, is Genji that much worse? Like, Canyon's been great, don't get me wrong. Like, Canyon's definitely top two, but I think, you know, just for impact and importance to their team, I put Peanut, then Canyon, and then Cuz.
I could agree with that take. I could agree with that take. I mean, there was some discussion when we were doing our votes. Like, some people were like, is Cuz MVP? Like, because he's the most valuable.
No, dude, Cuz was on MVP track, like, first half of the split. When they were 5-3, when Guangdong was 5-3, legitimate take is Cuz MVP at this league.
Yeah, but now it's, but now
it's not anymore. Let's be very clear. It hasn't been for a long time. But at one point in time, 8 games in before the brutal 9th and 10th match losses to Breon, that was looking like it could be true.
Yeah, I really respect Cuz. I think it's tragic that he's trapped on Guangdong. I hope he gets a real team next year. But at the end of the day, like, you know, he's had some great games. He has popped off and carried his team. He's had some games where he makes horrible mistakes and is trying to carry his team.
I agree with you.
Super hard. And so he can't be in my top three this season. And some of it's despite his team, or some of it's due to his team. Some of it's due to his own mistakes. So, but I respect your take. And Owner has had another season where he's a little bit exposed at the end. And that's true. And I think it could be a huge issue for T1 moving into playoffs. So keep an eye on that, because I don't trust Owner right now against Peanut, and I don't trust him to win against Canyon. So I don't think
I mean, for the same reason, I'm leaning towards in the top lane saying Zayas Keen. Right, just because I think Zayas is more crucial to T1's success than Keen is to Gen G's. I mean, Doran's won fucking titles with Chovy. That tells you all you need to know right there. But Keen is, like, obviously a better version of Doran, although Doran at least is way more clutch in pressure situations than Keen has been historically. So that is definitely cause for concern heading into the playoffs. But yeah, I think for me, I do Peanut, Canyon, Cuz. But we can move to mid lane, because it's definitely Chovy. And I think number two is Faker. And then number three is where it gets weird. Showmaker?
Showmaker.
BDD? Because the thing about Showmaker is Showmaker has been the only sign of life for a lot of the time on this D-plus roster. And this D-plus roster is a top five team in the league. So somebody must be good on this team to get them there.
It has been Showmaker. And I think for Showmaker, the early season...
The recency bias, you look at his Tristana games, you're like, ugh. But, you know, for most of the split, he was the only player playing well on this team.
Yeah, for most of the split. But for the end of the split, you know, it fell off a little bit. But I think you could say that about everyone else who's in contention for this. Like, BDD had a pretty mediocre split overall, especially once Azir was taken out of the picture. Zekka had some fantastic games, but also, like, played Corki, and every time he did, we really
didn't like it. I'm sorry. He is not allowed in the top three because of those Corki games.
And then
the crazy thing, Wolf, is he won those games, but he looked like shit doing it.
Yeah. Well, he lost some of them.
but he also won some disgusting, filthy Corki performances. Yeah. And that just goes to show how good the rest of his team is at shot calling, because Hanwha's macro is no joke. And also, you know, I think All Pro is very interesting this time, because it should be actually a good mix of most of the top teams. You know, but also at the same time, Wolf, like, we have to ask the question, who from KT is amongst these top players? Because it has to be somebody, right? Otherwise you're basically saying that none of their players are top three, but the power of friendship got them, you know, they're so much more than the sum of their parts, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, Pioshik, there's an argument for Pioshik, there's an argument for Barrel, there's an argument for BDD, but, like, I think about players in contention for third vote. Like, you have BDD, you have Zekka, you have Bulldog is probably maybe in discussion, but his laning phase...
No, his laning phase is too shit, man.
Showmaker, and I think that's it. But, like, all of those players all have glaring weaknesses. Like, you know, Zekka's champion pool, Showmaker's inconsistency throughout the season, Bulldog's laning phases... It's tough.
I think BDD has, like, quietly been quite good. Maybe I go with BDD in third. Like, the reason why we're putting Faker second, guys, should be obvious. Like, Faker's actually had an extremely good split. You can't give him Orianna, or he just completely takes over the laning phase. His laning has been really good on control mages. He's been high damage, like, very, very good player.
His itemization has been fantastic as well. Like, he led the charge on buying the Seeker's Arm Guard and baiting fights, and, you know, because... Stopwatch basically got removed from the game, and you have to buy Seekers now. no one was really buying it, and he was actually still investing in it and winning team fights out of that investment.
Yeah. He's still, by the way, he's like, the great thing about Faker still is, even though he's not very high on the damage charts, he's winning his lanes really hard for the most part, and then he doesn't take resources. All the resources go to like Zeus and Guma later in the game. So he's still he's still the low economy mid laner he's been the past few years. He's just very efficient.
Yeah. He just hasn't made the same impact Chovy has, but I think he's a very clear second. The more interesting conversation is who's third. I think that Zekka has been more clutch in team fights than BDD has. I went Zekka third, but I look at like all of the different other competitions for him, and I'm like, well, I don't feel good about Zekka in third. I don't really feel good about BDD third. I don't really feel good about Showmaker third. And so that one is tough. Now, it doesn't really matter that much because we all know Chovy's going to win it. So this is not going to be one of those things where I voted Zekka third, and so then he accidentally won because I made a mistake. Like, I don't feel guilty about the Zekka vote because the third place one is so up in the air for me. But I think this one, super obviously Chovy, and Faker second, and he's definitely going to get it. AD carry.
Also, no, I think I put BDD as third. I think I'm with BDD.
Yeah,
as third.
I think that's fine. I think it doesn't necessarily matter that much in this regard because there's almost no way to objectively boil down all the data and be like, yeah, it's clearly X player. I think the third one is just too up in the air for that, but I respect the BDD vote. I would have respected Showmaker as well if you did it. There's an argument for that. It wouldn't be mine, but I would have respected it. I thought you were going to say Bulldog, though, just because of your love.
No, Bulldog's lane is so garbage.
AD carry, pretty obviously Viper.
Viper.
I did Viper, Paze, then Guma.
Ooh, Paze's laning phase was really bad in the early parts of the split.
It definitely was. But in the late game, or in the later part of the season, he turned that around. I actually originally had...
The performance, I agree, because the performance versus T1, I think, really showed how much Guma had turned it on, right?
Yeah. I originally had Guma second. And I thought about it, and I was like, no, it's Paze. And yeah, obviously, Guma going into the end of the season, affected by the scaling meta in a different way. And he kept picking Lucian into like Kalista and losing. And I don't know if that's his decision or if that's Faker/coaching staff's decision. But I haven't really been happy with what he's picked and what he's tried to get done towards the end of the season. Whereas I think Paze has been otherwise very versatile at scaling picks. So that kind of pushed me over the edge to put Paze second. But I think the Viper first is super obvious this season. There's not really much of an argument against him. He's been great in lane with Delight. He's played alongside Delight's aggression very well. His positioning is fantastic. Every champion he plays, he's good at. Just really no contest in this position. I don't think Paze or Guma are really even close to him, sadly. Like, I'd say Faker is closer to Chovy than, like, Paze is to Viper right now. And that's all I need to say. Because Chovy is going to get MVP and is the best mid laner. Any further thoughts on the AD carry position?
This one's a little bit harder. Because, like... outside of Viper, it's been pretty murky, I would say. But Guma Yushi has been really good. I mean, you can't ignore Guma and Karia because it's the way that T1 plays. And they didn't get to second place in this league without winning really hard in the bot lane a lot of the time. And especially, you know, a lot of that was Karia and a lot of it was like double AD carry. But think about how many bans like Guma and Karia absorb in the ban phase. So they've been really important. But Paze, to your point, like, I can't help but think that had Guma Yushi been more versatile and been able to play Zeri, they wouldn't have faltered as much in the later stages of this season. So it went from like dominance to kind of going back into Paze's wheelhouse. But Paze, I think, has been he turned it on when it mattered. It's like, I can't ignore the T1 versus Gen G series where T1 was just first picking Lucian on blue side, and then Guma Yushi was winning, or Paze was winning lane, right? And clearly T1 thought that was how they attack Gen G. So I would say I agree. I think Viper pays Guma Yushi is fair.
I just think Guma, because this can tie into the support conversation, but I think Guma was so reliant on Karia, and it was like Guma Karia
I mean, that's always been true, right?
But like that means that I put him third because he is relying on his support a little bit more. This one was actually the hardest one for me was support. I ended up eventually locking in, and I don't even feel necessarily like I solved it and I did it, but did eventually go Caria, Delight, Lahens.
Okay. I think that's fair.
Caria is, you know, is still
this one's hard.
Support. He has won a ton of bottom lanes. He has had some really flashy moments. Like, you know, like I said, I'm not as impressed by his, like,
I mean, T1, it's my argument again. T1 doesn't work without Caria.
Yeah.
Because how they play is through bot lane, is through winning bot lane into snowballing. That's how they played for 2 years. So without Caria and his weird support pool and his innovation in terms of the Hail of Blades, AD Caria's support meta, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. So I think Caria definitely number one. There's a weird argument you can make for Barrel, Wolf.
Yeah, no, I actually thought about, like, should Barrel be in my top three? If he's not there, is this wrong? Because it was innovative this season as well. His shot calling is obviously paramount to his team's success. His engages were fantastic. His farming Nautilus picks, which won against Gen G, was really good to see. Like, he's just super strong at playing the Ornn support as well. So, I mean, Barrel is legit, like, really, really in the conversation. Hui support, you know, the first unusual pick he pulled out at the beginning of the season, which he piloted very well. I do think Barrel may be on a lot of lists. I don't think he's going to end up getting, obviously, the first all-pro, but
I think one of the interesting things is that support has actually been kind of a sneaky strong position in LCK this split, because even people like Peter and Pleta have been pretty good.
Yeah, it's true. Peter is Lulu. Pleta on basically everything is Nami is a big standout. So, you know, there are a lot of good supports this season, and it has been very difficult to ascertain, like, who is exactly the best. And that's why it was tough for me. I think Caria with Guma, but less about Guma, about Caria setting up Guma for success is part of why T1 has always been able to successfully set up those bot dives and Faker roams and the standard T1 practice, where Owner is early diving, Faker's roaming on Talia, for example. That's, you know, all through Caria finding success for his AD carry and pushing those lanes. Delight over Lahens was because I think Lahens wasn't as consistent this season. Didn't make the same impacts he made last summer where he was roaming a lot.
I think it took him a while to get used to, like, the Paze Lahens synergy took longer to develop than the rest of the synergy on Genji.
Yeah. You know, which is funny considering their past history, but the like early, week one, week two, week three games where, you know, Paze and Lahens are struggling in lane and Lahens is, like, yelling at Paze on the comms, like, in a funny way, but it's also kind of like, I could tell he's a little bit annoyed with how he managed
shit together.
Yeah. And then Paze, you know, sometimes, like, getting caught and stuff like that did happen. Like, we saw it in his debut season, and then we saw it, a little bit at the beginning of the season that it went away, but I think there was definitely some rockiness there. And Delight has just been extremely consistent. And in the past, we were like, never give Delight Rakan. He's insane on this pick. And now that Rakan is bad, he's like, I don't care. Whatever. I play everything extremely well, too. And, like, Rakan was so meta for so long that we were like, Delight's Rakan, it's coming! Watch out! And now he just doesn't need it to actually carry with almost anything. So I would almost argue, like I was saying earlier, that Delight has even been more consistent than Caria in his impact in team fights. But I still give Caria the edge because of the laning phases that have led to so many snowballs that T1 has won.
Yeah.
So I do give him a very slight edge, but I think Delight has been amazing this season. So it's really fun to have this conversation about what each support does differently, right? Like, because Barrel also is a similar type support to Caria in that the team needs him for success. He has a similar style of pushing lanes, finding lane success, winning lanes, getting his AD carry ahead. Deft then takes that, pushes it into the rest of the map. His engages are good in the later team fights. Manages chaos well. Sometimes he overextends, right? Caria doesn't do that as much, but you know, that's the stylistic similarity between those two. Lahens, I feel like, hasn't been able to. He hasn't been a bad support or anything. Like, he's definitely top three for me, but he hasn't been able to trust pays enough to do what he did with aiming on KT and end up being a really nice carry roam support like he has been in the past. I think that will probably change, and we'll probably see him go back to that style maybe towards the later part of the playoffs, but at least by, you know, middle of summer season, I think that Lehens will be ready to trust pays again, and, you know, we'll see some more of that. And then we can have a conversation about whether Lehens is actually, you know, maybe in the top two, but right now it doesn't seem like he is. And I think that third spot is really up to grabs. And I really don't feel like I think I've decided Carrier is number one over Delight just slightly, but I don't even think that's objective. Like, I think it's, you know, that's my opinion. And I think that we will have a lot of people have Delight first as well.
Yeah, I think it's pretty fair. And hopefully because of how close T1, Genji, and Hanwha have been, that there should be a pretty reasonable spread of players in All-Pro between the three teams. And we won't just end up with, I mean, it's going to be a crime if it's just all Genji again. Like, that doesn't make any fucking sense.
Oh, no way. There's no way.
Dude, if Paze ends up over Viper, I will personally walk over to Lull Park and start slapping people.
Please don't do that. But I don't think it's going to happen, right? I don't know,
Wolf. Some people are going to deserve some slaps. That's all I'm saying.
I just don't see any world. I could see some, like, media people making those votes happen. Obviously, Paze is, like, he's kind of the new rising mascot of the LCK. Like, in the LCK opening, he does the Royal Road, like, puts his, like, foot down and, like, starts the Royal Road thing in the LCK opening. And it's him looking at the three trophies and all that. Like, there's clearly a focus on the LCK of, like, this is one of our new rising stars. But I don't think anyone's going to be, like, biased by this and be like, well, I guess he's the guy. I see him in the opening. He's the one. Like, I'm ready to vote for Paze. His Viper has just been better. Like, that much is clear. Like, we know that. So
it's clear to us, Wolf. Sometimes I wonder what is clear and is not clear to other people who vote on these things.
Well, luckily the votes are public, so you can see and call people out.
So I know who to slap. Yep, I understand. It won't be a random slapping, Wolf. It'll be a targeted slapping.
There you go. I am right, super glad that our votes are public, at least, because a lot of the other stuff that goes on in these types of votes is not public, and then you could just do whatever you want and never be held accountable. So glad it's public. That's all I'm saying. I hope
too.
It stays that way, because I feel like it won't.
It will, because it is in all regions. And it's important that it is public, because otherwise there is no accountability and people just nepotism vote or do wacky shit because they don't care. The only thing that keeps people caring about this is the fact that it is public. So it should stay that way. I'm confident. Anyway, guys, that'll wrap up our regular season here. We are going to be talking next week about the first two playoff matches. As a reminder, there is no LCK this week. Wolf gets a long break to contemplate playoff matches and cast Overwatch. Or do you have any Overwatch this week?
I do, today and tomorrow.
Very good. And then on the 30th is when LCK will resume. So we will see you to discuss the first couple of playoff matches next week. We only have, what, 3 weekends left of playoffs, and then we're going to be done. Have they announced the location of the finals yet?
I don't know. I think they may have. Let me
Is it Lull Park? That would be a very LCS team. LCS thing for them to do.
It's not Lull Park. Let's see. Yes, it has been announced. So it's the KSPO Dome. I don't know which part of the KSPO Dome it's going to be, because the KSPO Dome has, like, a few different, like, stages. But the KSPO Dome has a really cool stage of one of the arenas where it's like a pretty wide, like, box type, like, seating thing, and then you have this, like, giant stage that comes out, kind of like we've seen a ton of OGN esports finals that are like this, like the Apex finals, where you have, like, this long walkway that you walk out, mm-hmm. right, the trophies in the center. It's got, like, a stage kind of like that. Cool. So I think it's a really good venue, assuming that we're in that really awesome one. The other ones are, like, a little bit smaller, whatever, but it does look like it could seat maybe 4,000 people, the arena. So I think it'll be a good finals location. It looks fun. It is announced, so enjoy. It's going to be in Seoul. I think a lot of people will be happy about that because we have been traveling a little bit for the last few finals. And so people in Seoul have been, you know, frustrated with having to commute and stuff. But I think it's good to allow fans from other cities the ability to go in. But this time it's in Seoul.
Very good. All right, guys. Thank you very much. We'll see you for some playoff discussion next week.